The following is a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio. Keep your mission on your mind, and your mind on your mission. This is Mission Minded with Michael Coleman.
Welcome back to Mission Minded. He's the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank, Michael Coleman. I'm Tony Curry. A show we do every single week, one of our 19 podcasts we do here on Tony Curry Radio. We are blowing the doors off and having a great time. This is one of my favorites because I get to talk to a very good friend of mine. I learn things from you every single week we do this show. And of course, we also do a show called Bite by Bite, which airs immediately after this on all of our Tony Curry Radio network of stations. And you can hear that show at least 5 days a week and wherever you get your favorite podcast. Michael, what's been going on, brother? Everything okay?
Yeah, pretty good week. And with the exception of the cut in the LFBA program, the USDA, which affects both schools and food banks, and some will be covering that on Bite by Bite today.
Yeah, and kind of to go along with that, because I know there's a lot of things that are being cut right now because Donald Trump firing federal workers. And of course, a lot of those workers are not coming back. There's judges saying you can't do this, that, and the other. You and I had a really interesting discussion. If you missed the show, go back and listen to last week's episode about the tariffs and exactly what he's doing. These are two totally unrelated things, but there is, and I mean, you look at the stock market, and again, a lot of that has to go with confidence in when the stock market's doing well, it seems like our economy's doing well. But not so much so. The president of Dollar General recently came out and had something very interesting to say yesterday. We'll get into that in a second. But I did have an email here from Todd and from Lucille, both questions about tariffs, and wanted to know how the tariffs and these taxes on things that are going in and out of the United States with sometimes some of our allies, including Canada and Mexico, are affecting the food business and affecting non-for-profits and food banks like yours.
Yeah. So yeah, there, some of those tariffs are going to be placed on food items. And just going back for those who may not have caught it, just, you know, the idea that tariffs are good, tariffs are bad. Traditionally, Republicans have been tariffs are bad because they're like a tax, and it makes the cost of goods higher. And the question is always, you know, I hear some people talk about, oh, well, the buyer's going to pay for that. And then some people say, well, the manufacturer, the company where and the country where they reside is going to pay that. And the answer to that question is, well, it all depends. It all depends on several factors that we kind of touched on last week. But lots of times, and most of the time, at least part of that is going to be passed on into the cost of goods sold and on to what you pay for. Now, sometimes they talked about a 25% tariff on wine. You know, and if you're talking about, okay, I pay $11 for a bottle of Italian wine, and then... Well, actually, they went back and they said it's going to be 200. So a 200% tariff could take a bottle of wine from $11 to $33. But the reality is there's still people go, well, that's my favorite wine. Whatever it is, that's what I'm going to get. But it could push people to say, well, I'm just not going to pay that for wine. I could buy three bottles of American wine for that. And so a wine manufacturer may say, hey, yeah, absolutely, this is our time to really grow our market share and take advantage of these tariffs. So tariffs are not bad for everybody. But the concern that we have right now, and this is to address specifically this question, is it's hard sometimes to understand exactly what Trump's purpose is in the tariffs. So like, for instance, it seems to be sometimes arbitrary. Now, if you step back from it and you go, okay, we pay $350 billion in tariffs around the world, and we're only getting $50 billion in tariffs. So that creates trade imbalances. So I'm all for saying, okay, wait a minute, these tariffs are starting with the other countries. They're charging us. We're just doing retaliatory to say, look, you're going to hit our stuff. then we're going to get equal amounts and offset that. And if you want to bring it all down, that's fine. And so I think in some respects, that's the goal. But we have previous presidents, previous administrations have allowed all this to happen because of the idea that, well, tariffs are bad and you know, it may negatively affect the economy. And I think Trump's coming in saying, no. What I'm really interested in is more balanced trade and fair trade. And so I'm going to come in with a big stick and try to equal this out a little bit. If that's the case, and he goes, and for short term, and while people adjust to this, this readjusting or this rebalancing, then there's going to be some hits because stock markets, as we know, it's really not an indication right now that stocks are not doing well. It's an indication that there's uncertainty. And so there's sell-off, people go to cash, they liquidate and kind of sit on the sidelines, wait until all this disruption starts. Then you have people who's for, you know, these are people's 401ks, these mm-hmm. are my retirement account and all that. So they get real anxious. So I think what Trump and his team needs to communicate though is, and reemphasizing is why exactly are we doing this? Now they've talked a little bit about the fentanyl and the drug and the,
yeah, that's the part, quite frankly, that I'm not really sure of. Cause I'm pretty sure, I mean, I don't know, but I mean, I'd listen to Trudeau and I'm pretty sure we don't have a fentanyl issue with Canada. I'd rather Trump just say, listen, you know, I'm going to be a badass here and we're not going to be pushed around anymore. And if it means treating our best friends and our allies like everyone else for a little period of time to let people know how it's going to be from now on, then that's what I'm going to have to do. But to sit there and to put it on the fentanyl thing, I think is kind of ridiculous. Anyway, that's just my thoughts.
Well, you know, that we seize less than 100 pounds of fentanyl from Canada, but 100 pounds of fentanyl can kill over a million people, you know, so it 100 pounds doesn't sound like a lot. It can have a devastating effect. It feels like, though, that it's less about the fentanyl and mm-hmm. more about just trying to rebalance trade. And he's doing it in a rush way, like he is doing the cuts, because I get it. He's got the momentum right now and he's pushing through that. But as the stock market comes down, and I think people who support the president are willing to kind of give him, for right now, benefit of the doubt, because historically, like when COVID, half the stock market went away, but then it bounces back. And that's historically what it does. If there's not inherent weaknesses in the stock market, if productivity is still good, if our GDP still is expanding, then those stocks are going to bounce back at some point once all this settles out. It's just people get very, very nervous. But to answer your question, a lot of our produce come from Mexico and even in South America. And so you heard a lot about Mexico, but not about other South American countries. And I don't think Trump's going to hit those unless they are already hitting us with tariffs.
Yeah.
So the bottom line is, if you're a proponent of tariffs, and there are good aspects of it, it's a chance for American makers, manufacturers, to get market share while their competitors overseas have higher prices. Now, and I'll say this too, it is very true when Trump says, whether you like Trump or whether you hate Trump, it is very true that for many, many years, different countries have dumped product, have subsidized their home country and then dumped cheaper products. Trump is exactly right that car companies move to Mexico mm-hmm. or even certain parts because the labor's cheaper. And then they want to turn around and resell it back for American cars and all that. And he's like, no. I'm not going to reward you for taking American jobs. You want to bring that back, I'll remove any tariffs from your company. But if you want to go down there and build it, I'm going to penalize you the difference. So it disincentivizes manufacturers from picking up and leaving.
Yeah.
So, I think that's a right move. I'm all for that kind of move. But in all the positives that come about, you get some negative aspects right now. We're going through that. And the question is he going to be able to keep it going, or is the political pressure going to build, or, you know, and does he even care? He's in his last term. If he says, hey, this is going to be this way for the next 2 years. And it doesn't matter because he doesn't have to run for election again. Can he continue to make the case and paint a bigger picture of the good that's being done to offset the concern in the stock
market? It is amazing to me, and I'll say this. I'd rather have a president or my leader at least doing something. You know, we talk about, yeah, you know, the excuse of staying busy. I forget what it is, staying busy and not doing anything, blah, 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 blah. This guy's moving the needle, regardless of whether you like it being moved or not.
Yeah.
And considering what we just went through, where I feel like we'd go weeks without hearing anything from the president.
Yeah.
You know, now we're hearing from him like every time you turn the news on, you're hearing something about the president. And hell, he's only been in office for 60 days. I mean, it's pretty amazing what he's getting done. Now, a lot of that stuff's going to have to come back, and a lot of the things he's doing aren't legal. We realize that. And in typical Trump fashion, there's a lot of lies going on with that. He reminds me kind of like my Uncle Ed. You know, he tells these great stories. We realize half of them are lies, but, you know, it's Uncle Ed. You know, it's like you just go with it. So, yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. But, you know, I do think it's important who you're listening to, what you're watching, because obviously if you're listening to NBC or Fox or whatever, you're getting one side of the story, and it does seem like it's doom or gloom. If I have to hear one more story about some guy who's got some special craft beer up in Minnesota that's going to close his business because aluminum cans are going to cost too much, I'm going to shoot myself. I'm kind of like, okay, well, you know, I don't, you're selling aluminum cans of beer for $18 a piece. I don't know what to tell you.
And that's exactly the same thing with the cuts on the LFPA. And, you know, I don't want to be one of those guys that's like, oh yeah, I think everybody else should be cut. Don't cut us. I mean, the LFPA is a program. Not every state utilizes it. Alabama was one of the first, and we do it very well. But basically, we get money. It goes to the Department of Agriculture. They pay disadvantaged farmers to grow crops, and then those crops are shipped directly to food banks to feed Alabamians. Mm-hmm. And every state that does this program, and so it's a fantastic program. There's not a lot of waste and abuse. There's really not the opportunity, but of course, every program has some of it. I mean, it hurts. It affects us. But the bottom line is we're going to have to adjust like everybody else.
This mission minded. Keep in mind your mission, your mind. We do the show every single week. Michael Coleman is the CEO of the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Hashtag HAFB. Also, Bite by Bite, which is coming up here next. A shorter version and more specific to the need of feeding America and the Heart of Alabama Food Bank. Dollar General CEO just came out and warned that low income Americans are having as tough a time as ever. As a matter of fact, he basically said that we're now going without things that are necessary to live, whether it be deodorant, whether it be baby food, whether it be things that quite frankly, we just take for granted if you're in the middle class or upper class. And it's really interesting because the average core customer at Dollar General, we got one that just opened up down here. It used to be a CVS. The place is huge. My kids love going on there because they got cheap shit. I mean, I don't know what else to say. Yeah. It's cheap stuff. It's, you know, it's your dollar. If you want to go, if you're having a birthday party for some kids and you need to get 16 gifts, it's the perfect place to go because you can walk in. You don't have to go to Walmart and spend hundreds of dollars. You can just get a couple of pencils or whatever for a buck or whatever. And yeah, they got other things. I love the fact that the one down here is now selling milk, which is great because I always run out of milk. And I hate having to find a Publix, get out, and I could just whip by there, get in there, get it out, get my milk. But he said that the lower income Americans in this country are really having a difficult time. And I would listen to a man like this because he has 20,000 stores that caters to exactly that forum. What does that tell you? It's kind of scary to me because we have a trickle down effect, right? When we are losing money, we stop eating at Fleming's and we go to Outback. And then when we start losing money, we leave Outback and we go, you know, to McDonald's. And then we go from McDonald's to a street vendor. I mean, that's what we do. And I would think there's really nothing lower outside a food bank than there is at a Dollar General. So if we're having a hard time there, what does that tell you what our country is going through right now and you know, what we're headed for?
Yeah. This is why they do the consumer sentiment every month. Like are consumers feeling optimistic? Because that can be a leading indicator that there's a problem that maybe the data to manufacturing or GDP or those kind of things maybe are not bringing to light just yet. It hadn't fully come to fruition. But if you just look at human behavior, it's usually the leading indicator. So if you see more and more people shopping, if he sees an uptick in what's going on at Dollar General, then the question is, okay, wait a minute, something is causing that. And without really, I mean, a lot of surveys, and you'd have to talk to people, is this the first time you've shopped here, or are you becoming a regular shopper, and what's driving that in your world? And there's going to be a million different things. Inflation, I think, is still a key part of that, continuing inflation. And then when you have, and we see this in food banking all the time, but when you're able to make ends meet, that's if everything goes well and you don't have any special problems, but you have a health problem and you got hospital bills that you weren't anticipating. You have just a myriad of things that happen. Your car breaks down, whatever. And now you can no longer make those two ends meet and there's a gap. And so you start saying, well, how can I make up that gap? Well, some of it is I may just not get as much, or I may have to shop somewhere cheaper, all those kind of things. So there may be things going on. It's hard to always know in advance what's causing that trend, but it's certainly, I mean, that's what economists look at least in part of those kind of comments like that, saying, well, if people are already shopping there, there's something that's going to come to light that's going to be a clear indicator as to at least what that driving force is. So I definitely think it's somebody to listen to and something to, I'm sure a lot of people are paying attention to what he has to say.
Do you, Michael Coleman, as the CEO of a huge non-for-profit in the heart of Alabama Food Bank, do you have any chief indicators you keep an eye on?
Yeah, we measure it all the time about the number of people coming to food banks. And part of it is we really, because to get the data that we really need to make those kind of assessments, it's very difficult. Like right now, we have across the entire network of 35 counties, we might have 700, 750 community agencies who are doing church pantries or distributing food. Sometimes they do prepared food on site, but they're distributing food in some capacity. And so the USDA, if it's USDA food involved, you know, they want to know seniors, families, children, our households, adults. They want to know veterans. But to really get into like what we really need to know is to be able to talk to each one of them and go, okay, are you new? Or is this, I mean, do you come every month? Or are you new? And if you're new, what has happened in your life? You know, and I think I've shared a couple of examples the last few months. One just is one of those where an 84-year-old gentleman, for the first time in his life, was in a food bank, in a food line, because his medicine went from $750 a month to $1,200 a month. Mm-hmm. And now, you know, so that cut into his ability to feed he and his wife. His wife is 80 years old. You have things like that where you think, hey, I'm prepared for retirement. Next thing you know, hey, I'm not, because of inflation of medication. Another one had a family tragedy that meant she could no longer be in the workforce. So now they're down to one family income. So there's individual things like that that would happen. Even if the economy was super robust and there was tons of jobs out there, things happen that put people in these situations that have nothing to do with government. It's just how life plays itself out. So you have that, but then you also have where, you know, people say, I have $400 to feed my family a month, and $400 simply doesn't buy what $400 used to have, or you add a child to the family. So now again, you've got a gap that's created, and we're the place to go supplement that. So that's the kind of data to make those kind of judgments that we really need. Feeding America does it on a large scale sometimes, but in our communities, we just say, are you getting more people? Are they ordering more food? You know, and, you know, is the demand more? That's the kind of stuff we're getting. But getting into the whys lots of times is very hard for us to be able to determine. Is there one or two key things that's happening? Now, inflation, we know it's been around. It's driven people into food lines, especially because of inflation, all the things that go up, the groceries have really and continue to to be a struggle. Now, it's slowing down a little bit, which is great, but it's still problematic for a lot of families.
It's funny because we used to always look at eggs. You always looked at eggs as an indicator of where the inflation or where and obviously the eggs have gone through the roof, not so much because of inflation and stuff like that, but because of the bird flu. And I just went and bought again, a dozen. Yeah. So that's kind of a
other factors like there.
A little bit. All right. Great stuff, man. We'll let you fly. We'll do it again next week. Mission minded. What do you got going on? Bite by bite. What are we talking next?
Yeah, we're going to be talking about this LFPA program and the farm cuts and what it means. And what does a food bank like us do? I mean, it's a $600,000 impact hit on us. And it's one of those where we need, you know, communities to step up and people in the community, government entities to say, hey, let's help offset that through other means. And so question is we're missing out on that fresh produce. So how do we replace it and where do we get the money to be able to do that? And so we have some things, but you can't just fill a $600,000 hole overnight.
We love your thoughts and your emails too. info@tonycurryradio.net, info@tonycurryradio.net. Thanks for listening.
This has been a special presentation of Tony Curry Radio.